Hey everyone, I wanted to thank you for listening to another episode of Speed Bumps. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would really appreciate it if you subscribed on whatever platform you're listening to this on. If you're listening on Spotify, I would really appreciate if you clicked that 5-star button. And if you're on Apple, you can click the 5-star button and leave a written review if you're so inclined. If you're interested in coming on my show, you can reach out to me at speed.bumps.podcast on Instagram. When you're driving, speed bumps force you to slow down. Some are big, some are small. Regardless of the size, they can really mess up your car if you go over them too fast. In this go, go, go world, society tends to have a negative view of speed bumps. But in my opinion, they don't have to be a bad thing. We all go through speed bumps in life, such as getting married, a spiritual awakening, having children, changing jobs, a trauma, and more. In this podcast, you will hear the various speed bumps that people have encountered and how those experiences have shaped them into the person they are now. Because every story has speed bumps, and that is what makes life interesting. Everyone, I wanted to welcome you to another episode of Speed Bumps, and today with me I have Natasha. I've actually been following her Instagram account for a really long time, and she is a dental hygienist that does things more naturally, and I was really intrigued by all the things that she covers on her account, and I was super excited that she agreed to come on, so thank you, Natasha.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the first question I have to ask everyone is, please tell me two things you love about yourself.
I would say my first one is just how much I enjoy learning and I'm open to learning. I just am always learning a new skill or learning about different health things or whatever. I've just always really enjoyed to learn. And then the second one, I would probably say that I work really hard to be a good mom. It's hard every day, but I, you know, every day I try and some days I fail, but it's just something that I think I'm improving on every day. And that's all I can ask for.
Yeah. And you have two young sons, correct?
Mm-hmm. I have two little boys. I have a 3-year-old and a 9-month-old.
Okay. I remember seeing something about George Washington's birthday and you did a bunch of creative things and that was just so cute.
Thank you. Thanks.
So I know you had talked about, I'd really like to hear more about going into dental hygiene school and kind of the traditional schooling that you're taught and how that kind of conflicted with either your gut or how that whole thing went down.
Okay, sure. So a little bit of background. I had some fertility issues and miscarriages prior to entering dental hygiene school. So because of that, well, I had kind of dove into like the health world and getting healthy and working out years before. And then when the fertility issues came up, I really took an even deeper dive, especially when it came to nutrition. And I got really intrigued by functional medicine, you know, which is just really getting to the root cause of things rather than just masking with symptoms. So I was very intrigued by that. In fact, I wasn't totally sure I wanted to go to dental hygiene school because I really wanted to become maybe like a nurse practitioner or a doctor, but kind of specialize in functional medicine. Anyway, I still decided to pursue dental hygiene school. And when I was in the program, I just felt this like disconnect because in the medical world, even though it's very much in most cases, it's, you know, just treat something with a pill. There's at least that niche field of functional medicine or people who think that way. And it didn't really seem the case to be the case for the dental world. It was so hard to find information on, you know, just more nutrition aspects than what we're taught in school and all of that. So it does exist. I've found out since, but it's, you know, harder to find that information. So anyway, luckily I had the supervising dentist that was over the program, he was getting his master's degree in functional medicine and nutrition. So he really, like, we would have really good conversations and he really pushed me to just kind of be bold with continuing to pursue that and look into it and stuff like that. And he encouraged me to write like my research paper on fluoride and just really do deep dives into all of this. And so I guess I kind of at that point, because I was a student and so still learning so much, like I felt like I needed permission to kind of like think outside of the box, you know, and I felt like he gave that to me. So anyway, I came across like the work of Weston A. Price, which he was a dentist who traveled the world in the early 1900s. And he was looking at why all of a sudden the Western world was experiencing these high rates of disease and cavities. And anyway, I don't know if we want to go into that later, but I came across his work and it just really opened my eyes like, okay, yes, this is the answer I've been looking for. This is like, there's so much more to it than just like, oh, you have like a fluoride deficiency. Let's just slap this on and, you know, this yeah. fluoride on and brush your teeth more and you should be good, you know? So anyway, a lot of things fell into place for me to, I guess, find this path that I'm currently on. So yeah.
Yeah. I knew about fluoride, you know, in the water and how, you know, that could be a potential like neurotoxin and all these different things. And, you know, if you read the back of toothpaste that have fluoride in it, they always say, do not swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always like, why, you know, why is that? And so a lot of people now who I guess are more health conscious or even just, you know, surface level diving into some of this stuff, they recognize that maybe fluoride, isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I know you're posting about how the EPA is like currently on trial, right, for fluoride.
Yes. Yes. So, I've been so excited about this. I've been nerding out over it. Yeah. So there's a group of, there's a group of people and organizations that are suing the EPA to try to get them to remove fluoride from the water because of all the links to, especially to, as a neurotoxin, links to decreased IQ in moms who consumed fluoridated water while they were pregnant. And there are so many studies. I think there are over 70 now. And yeah, it's a big deal. And actually, the most recent study was published in the Journal of American Medical Association Pediatrics, which is a very respected journal. And even the editor came out and said, like, we really struggled with our decision to publish this because it's so controversial. And because, like, you know, he says something along the lines of like grouping anti-fluoride people with like anti-vaxxers and conspiracy theorists. Like he says that in a podcast and he's just saying that's why he struggled, but he's like, but the data is there and worth being explored essentially. So that's one of the many studies being used against the EPA. It's been going on. They've been dragging their feet and they're just right now, the status is they're waiting for the National Toxicology Program to release this report, which the EPA has tried. I think there's just a lot going on with several health agencies within the government trying to push for them to not release this report. And the judge just ordered them that they have to release it. And I think it's being released it's in the next couple months. So I'm okay. Very excited and very hopeful. So we'll see.
It's so interesting to me. Okay. So, I have my master's in infectious diseases and microbiology. So I understand at the time when I was in, I was very much indoctrinated, not educated. And I educated myself later is how I like to put it.
Love that. Yes. Love that.
And it's so interesting to me that the editor of this very well-respected journal was like, well, the data is definitely there, but if we publish this, it could go against mainstream and that's not a good thing.
Totally.
Like how many papers out there, just not on fluoride, mm-hmm. but other topics aren't published because the editor is like, that's a little too controversial.
Totally. Like this, I feel like the data would have to be so incredibly undeniable because there's, like you said, there's so many good papers out there that are just brushed under the rug because it's like, oh shoot, we made a mistake or we don't want people to know this or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, it's just insane to me. And yeah, I'm really, really hopeful. The judge in this case has been amazing and very, very harsh on the EPA, which going into it, as I watched the trial, I thought there's no way this is going to work out. Like there's no way, you know,
yeah.
But the judge has been very harsh on the EPA and he's just, the EPA has essentially just kind of tried to like, I don't know, brush things under the rug and just kind of, they have no solid data or no solid anything I think they just were relying on the fact that we've always fluoridated to get them through this case.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they just look dumb in court. It's been kind of comical, actually. Yeah, it's actually what's entertaining. It's been entertaining to watch because I'm like, what makes you think that this is going to get you anywhere, you know? So anyway.
Yeah, no, in a common quote, I guess I see in regards to all things health related, or if you have chronic pain or whatever, just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal. So just because we've been doing it for forever, if we don't understand why, and there's no data to back totally. That up, why are we doing it? And pick the topic, right? And I feel like examining data on everything, that's how we grow in science, not just blindly accepting things. It's good to question.
Absolutely. There's like this, it's like you can become at some point too educated to where you're prideful and you're like not willing to look at new data, or, and you think you know everything. And that's where we're at in the current state of, you know, medical and research and dental and all of that. And, you know, anyone who steps outside of that is like mocked or stripped of their license or whatever. Yeah. And it's just so crazy and so sad. It's very fascinating to me that there's not a peep of this in like the news. Like, this is huge, huge news. I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but it is still fascinating to me that no one knows about this.
It is. And it's interesting to me because I recently went to the dentist, and they were a newer dentist, and I asked if the Profi paste had fluoride in it. And I was like, they said yes. I said, okay. I was like, I don't want it. And they're like, oh, why? I was like, I don't do fluoride products. And they're like, oh, you're going to get cavities if you don't. And my teeth are great. And I honestly feel like when she was like measuring the gum recession, she like scraped down a little bit of one of my teeth. Cause then when she was scraping it off, it like hurt. And I was like, ow. And she's like, oh yeah, see, this is why you need fluoride. Your tooth is going to fall out if you don't. Well, within a couple hours, that sensitivity wasn't there anymore. I think she was like trying to prove a point, and I was like, no.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And, you know, I talk a lot about hydroxyapatite toothpaste, which hydroxyapatite is a mineral that is part of the, what makes up your tooth. So now there's toothpaste that contains that. It's actually been in use in Japan for decades. And anyway, it's been shown to be as effective as fluoride without, you know, the neurotoxin aspect of it. So yeah, it's crazy that so many people have to fight their dentists on it. And, you know, it does seem to be getting better, I will say. I feel like we're slowly shifting toward normalizing people not wanting to use fluoride, but it's still, I don't know. I still feel like patients get bullied by it in a lot of cases, like you were. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know some, if someone's looking for a hydroxyapatite toothpaste, I know like Risewell's one. I think doTERRA has one. Do you know of any others? Like if someone wanted to go and look?
Yeah, there's several. So Boca is a good brand, BOKA. I actually have, I did two posts on like dental related stuff, and I have a whole list of them there.
Okay.
So, and hydroxyapatite is not the only remineralizing ingredient. It's just a really trending one right now, but there's several others, which I list in that post as well. But there's a lot of things you can do to remineralize teeth. Like the concept that like you can only remineralize using fluoride is just so crazy to me. Like there's so many things that make up a tooth, and, it's just so silly that the only thing is like, oh, here, slap this fluoride on, or you need more fluoride. Like cavities are not a fluoride deficiency, you know, that's like a band-aid cover up. Anyway, so yeah, but in my posts, which are, I just published a couple weeks ago. So, should be toward the top of my timeline, and you can probably link them, but
yep, I'll link
they,
them.
Yeah, they have, I list some, toothpaste there and some other ingredients you can look for to help remineralize, and some other things as well. So
is like coconut oil pulling, is that beneficial, or activated charcoal? Like some of these things I feel like trend, but there isn't a lot of necessarily explanation behind it when some of these health bloggers post. So are some of
Totally.
these trending things actually useful, or are they just that trendy?
Yeah, so coconut oil or oil pulling in general is very beneficial. In Ayurvedic medicine, they've been doing it for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. They use sesame oil,
Okay.
but coconut oil is sufficient as well. Those are the two oils that are most well researched and have been used for a long time. But yeah, there's not only does it can it help the microbiome, but it can also help to strengthen the teeth as well. So that's a beneficial one. And it can help with sensitivity. And then charcoal toothpaste is can be beneficial. The only thing you want to watch for, and it's the same for any toothpaste though, is just how abrasive it is. Because if it's too abrasive, it can, damage the enamel. But most of the charcoal toothpaste that I have seen are within like the healthier limits of, or the okay limits, I guess, of that abrasiveness. So there's an abrasive index I can send to you that you can link, and people can always reach out and to the company and find out where things fall on that abrasive index. But even some of the most common toothpastes that are sold over the counter that dentists will recommend are way too abrasive. But dentists are very quick to say, oh no, charcoal's too abrasive, just because it's something new and they don't know. But actually, they're not looking at that index, because like some of the most common, like I said, Colgate and Crest, a few of their different types of toothpaste are way more abrasive than they should be on that scale. So anyway, for the most part, yeah, charcoal can be definitely helpful.
That's super interesting. I didn't know there was even an abrasive scale. So if you could send that to me, that would be appreciated. I'll definitely link that.
Yeah, I can do that.
Going back, if you don't mind, to some of your fertility issues, what were some of the first steps that you took in, I guess, changing your lifestyle to make your try and help your body conceive?
So, I had been on birth control for a long time, and coming off of birth control, of course, like my periods were all over the place and stuff. And then, I was diagnosed with PCOS. And so the big, I left a doctor's appointment where he said, okay, well, you're not having periods. So we want to put you on Clomid to ovulate, force your body to ovulate, then put you back on birth control to regulate your periods. And I was just like, this doesn't feel right to me. This was like the very first moment where I was like, no, this is not the right way to do things with all these band-aid approaches. And I left that appointment just thinking like, this is not the right way for me. And so I was scared because I'm like, I've never really gone against like what my doctor's advice was or anything, but I was like, this can't be it. So I started doing deep dives into different podcasts and websites. And I would say my first big thing was eating more fats and not being afraid of fats that come from nature, like eggs and fatty cuts of meat, dark meat, things like that, butter. And those really help to balance your blood sugars, and they're necessary for your hormones, which are two things that for certain types, because there's different kinds of PCOS. But for certain types of PCOS, those are big issues. Is like insulin resistance and blood sugar issues. And then obviously your hormones are whacked, or out of whack. So, just eating real foods was a huge, huge step for me, and not being afraid of fats, working on balancing blood sugars. So pairing a protein with any time I ate anything, I would have a protein, fat, and carb like all together, just really learning to balance all of that. So I feel like that was my huge, like a big, big step. And then I slowly started transitioning like my body care type of stuff, like deodorant, I think was my first one, just removing, because traditional deodorants have a lot of bad ingredients. And the main one of concern is aluminum, which a lot of deodorants have now begun to remove that, actually, even just like regular brands. But yeah, changing things that I used like all over my body or often. So that, body lotion, body washes, things like that. So yeah, diet was first, and then I transitioned into toxin, removing toxins and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like for us, it was very similarly. And it's interesting how I thought I was like eating healthy, right? And, you know, because I was eating the lean cuts of meat and boiling things or grilling things and never like baking or frying, like all of these things.
White rice and or I mean brown rice and cauliflower and
And, you know, use the cauliflower rice instead of regular rice and fats are bad. And when I really started embracing, you know, cooking an egg and butter and things changed, like
those little
things make a difference.
They really do. And you can just feel it in your body. And that was like, I remember when I was in, so I've been, I feel like I've been, I had been unhealthy like my whole life. I always had migraines and stomach issues as a kid and like so many issues. And I remember in college, my roommate saying something about like being in tune with her body. And I was like, I would love to feel that. I don't know what that means, but I would love to feel that. And, you know, as I started working out and stuff like that, I do feel like I definitely was way more in tune with my body, but it wasn't until I really started eating real foods, that I was like, wow, I like am so in tune with my body and I just feel so like aligned body, mind, and spirit. And yeah, it makes such a huge difference.
It's almost like a light gets turned on in your body when you're eating the way that you should.
Totally. Totally. Which is so funny because of course that's the case, but there's such a disconnect there between like our mind and how we function and stuff. And people just think food has little to no effect on all of that. But every cell in our body requires, you know, food that, or, you know, different nutrients from the food that we eat. And if we're not providing it with those nourishing foods, how can it function correctly? It's just so funny that for the longest time for me, like my whole life until I was, you know, in my early 20s, there was just this disconnect between like, okay, yeah, food sometimes like gives me a stomach ache or whatever, but it doesn't affect anything else, but it affects everything else.
And no, it so affects everything else. And I feel like this perfectly ties into Weston A. Price. Mm-hmm. And so I know about him, but can you tell the listeners about how food really plays a role, not in your body, but like in your dental arch?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite topics. So, okay. So like I mentioned, Weston A. Price traveled the world in the early 1900s and he was going to all of these different groups of people that were living away from modern society. So just to give an example, like he traveled to Africa, to Switzerland, to Australia. So I think it was like 7 countries in total. I could be wrong there. Anyway, and he looked at, okay, what's the difference? Why are these people not getting any cavities? They have these beautiful dental arches and everything. So he looked at their diet and found that their diets were rich in fat soluble vitamins. So they weren't afraid of all these animal fats. And they were not consuming like the refined flours and sugars. So one of my favorite examples from his work is in Switzerland, there was a group of people who lived high up in the Swiss Alps. So they didn't really have access to like the kind of city type of area where you could buy a lot more of that stuff. And they had those people in that city or in that village high up in the Alps had, you know, these beautiful wide dental arches, straight teeth, room for all of their teeth, including their wisdom teeth, and no cavities or very few cavities. And then not very far away, but down, you know, not in the Swiss Alps, more in the valley area, there was another group of people who lived close to a railroad. Or maybe it wasn't a railroad, but it was like some sort of transportation, you know, area, high traffic transportation area where they had access to all these refined grains, refined sugars, and they had replaced a lot of their healthy fats with these sugars. So anyway, then there was a significant increase in cavities in those groups. Their dental arches were really narrow, crowded teeth, lots of dental issues. So what he concluded is that when we have these healthy fats in our diet, it allows our bones, especially our facial structures, to really form properly. And he found that even within one generation of mothers consuming refined flours and sugars and stuff instead of these foods, their dental arches narrowed. Their children's dental arches were narrower. They had more cavities. So anyway, yes. Yeah, so essentially replacement of our good real foods with refined processed foods that are pretty nutrient devoid can result in that. And when our palates are narrower, it restricts our airways and it crowds our teeth. And there's so many issues. People just think, oh, well, you just need braces. But no, there's so much more to that. It's our airway. Like air is the essence of life, you know? So anyway, that's what his work found. And then, so I read that toward the end of my dental hygiene school. And then I went to Sri Lanka, which is like a little country off the coast of India. And I saw all of that firsthand, like these children that had room for all 32 teeth because we were working in this remote village. They had beautiful, beautiful arches. But then a lot of them, their parents had eaten that way, you know, more traditional diets and things like that, stayed away from the refined sugars. But then, you know, in more recent decades, those foods had started to seep in. So sometimes you'd still see the beautiful arches, but then you would see kids with like rampant decay all over their teeth. Or so anyway, it's just like I got to see firsthand all of that. And so it was just like so fascinating to me.
Yeah, because if you think about it, dentistry is a fairly modern thing.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes a tooth would need to be pulled or whatever, but it wasn't a super common thing. You know, they talk about, it was like boar's hair bristle brushes or some weird thing, mm-hmm. right? To like brush their teeth, but it wasn't a super common thing. They didn't have these toothpastes, but you also don't hear stories of people's teeth rotting out of their mouths, but no one asks why.
Exactly. Yes. And you know, and I think we look at teeth because that's an outward physical manifestation. But if you also think about like what else is going in our bodies, you know, with the lack of these fat soluble vitamins and stuff, there's actually a small section in his book that talks about the link to like short, fast labors and pelvis, like the pelvis bones and things like that as related to birth. And he found a correlation between, you know, these narrower jaws and airways and stuff like that and longer, harder labors and births versus like, you know, you see, I remember watching a video in like middle school or high school in one of my classes of like, I don't even know what we were watching, but like a lady in Africa, a pregnant mom in Africa in this remote village, and she goes off, walks away, has her baby within like 10 minutes and then walks back with the baby, like just easiest thing, you know. So it's just interesting, just fascinating. Like I said, we look at the teeth a lot and talk about it and the facial structures because we can, those are visible, we can see them, but there's got to be so much more too.
Yeah,
going on
not only our teeth, but you know, they say if you get acne in certain parts of your area, it's can be a sign of certain toxins building up in certain areas of the body.
Yeah.
Or you know, the way women menstruate and for how long, like that is totally a sign of what is happening in your body, your nails, your hair, all of these warning signs, right? If you think of your body as a car, all these are like check engine, whatever lights. And but we've been taught not to listen to them, right? It's let's just put nail polish over it if our nails are too weak, and let's go get acrylics or it's all these different band-aids through society as opposed to figuring out why these lights are on in the first place.
Totally. Yes. And, you know, put you on antibiotics for your acne or whatever. It's so crazy that, yes, all of these things are like our bodies asking us to address these things. So, and like, that's what I had found prior to going to dental hygiene school, you know, with my own health. And then, so then when I was in hygiene school and we're talking about cavities and periodontal disease and, you know, all of these things, and I'm like, okay, but what is our body telling us? When with these things, there's got to be more, you know? So anyway, yeah. And there is more, it turns out. I just couldn't find the answers at the time.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's I follow a variety of Instagram accounts, and there's a gentleman who recently started posting that fluoride is good. and that it's all overblown and we actually need it and it's not something we need to be afraid of, at least toothpaste wise. And he was claiming he was having more decay with using a natural toothpaste, but his dental issues became better after fluoride. And that was so, just doesn't make sense to me. And obviously everyone is different, right? Everyone's body does different things. But it was just very odd to
Yeah, I
me, the
actually know
switch.
who you're talking about. Someone sent me that. And I think what he would need to look at is iodine deficiency in himself. Because if you look at the periodic table of elements, this is kind of getting deep, but I won't go too deep. Like all of, so fluorine, which is fluoride, chlorine, bromine, and iodine, those are all in the halogen like column, you know? Oh, yeah. So anyway, yeah. So essentially, like in the body, anytime we consume fluoride or chlorine, or bromine for that matter, those can all take the place of iodine in the body. And so that's like, for example, in hypothyroid patients or hyperthyroid patients, so patients with overactive thyroid, they used to give fluoride because they knew it would take that place of the iodine in the body and to slow down the fluoride, so that, or slow down the thyroid. So I feel like that tells you right there, you know. But I do think, I mean, he has somewhat of a point just in that being fluoride does exist in nature, or fluorine, you know, in a natural state. But that doesn't mean we need to dump it into all of our water and dump it into our toothpaste. Like there's an imbalance and a deficiency there that's not being addressed. Fluoride is kind of a band-aid fix. It can be, topical fluoride can be effective. Systemic fluoride, I don't agree with as far as effectiveness, because if we look at cavity rates in countries that don't, or even areas within the US that don't use fluoride, they're very similar to that of areas that fluoridate their water. But anyway, yeah, he does have a point in that fluorine does exist in nature, and all things in an in a it's in their correct balance are okay, but we don't need to be like hyper consuming any single one of them just because they work for certain, you know, issues or whatever.
Yeah, and that right there makes more sense to me than anything, because whatever the supplement is, right? People for the longest time were really big on D3, but they weren't doing it with K2. So that can become really toxic in the body. But for most people, if you say that, they're like, oh no, you need vitamin D. And I'm like, but there's these
Just all the vitamin
cofactors.
D. Totally, totally.
You can't isolate these little things. And that's what we want to do, is take like this little isolated part and say that that's the magic pill, as opposed to looking at the whole thing and how it works in the body.
Absolutely. Like anytime we're taking this one thing and isolating it, and we're there's has to be other things out of balance. That's what happens. That's, you know, that's why, I don't know. Yeah, it's the same concept of like, as we're like we were talking about before, when we think we know better than nature and we get too prideful. Like you can't outsmart nature. You just have to live within the bounds of nature. And you know, I don't know, like if your listeners are religious, but I just feel like that's the way like God intended it, or nature intended it, is to have this balance that can only be found in nature in its natural form type of thing. So yeah, it's just, yeah, too much of a good thing is a bad thing. Vitamin D, for example, fluoride. I mean, I'm not saying fluoride is like necessarily a good thing. I don't want to confuse people, but it does exist in nature and in certain foods. You'll find it, lots of foods grown in the ground and stuff like that, naturally, not accounting for like the fluoride that we add to the water that's grown with those, but it just naturally exists and it's there, and we don't need to necessarily fear it in its natural form, but you know, we don't need to supplement it either.
And there was someone was talking about chocolate, and it was like, oh, well, you shouldn't use this brand because it has like lead and cadmium in it, and you know, this is bad, and so don't eat chocolate. And I'm like, I'm still
It's
gonna
the
eat
same,
chocolate.
yeah, it's the
Like,
same concept there.
it is. And I feel like anything can be taken to an extreme. And if you don't understand the whole picture, it's easy to become scared of these headlines, right?
Totally.
And you know, someone had brought up a good point of well, it depends on the soil that it was in, not necessarily pesticides, but just the soil that it was in. Like lead and cadmium are regularly in soil. That's not, I'm not saying go out and lick some lead paint, right? But if you want to have some dark chocolate, like go have some dark chocolate.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's the balance that matters between all these different minerals or metals or whatever it is that's in the soil and in the earth. It's the balance that matters. And actually, like trace minerals that are in the soil as well have a protective factor against heavy metals. And there's lots of interesting like research articles on that if you just search like trace minerals protective mechanisms for heavy metals. And you know, they actually find more heavy metal toxicity in children that live in like areas that are they're malnourished because they don't have trace minerals to like act as a protective mechanism. But yeah, it's the same thing. Like, no, you don't need to fear chocolate because there's like a heavy metal in it. It's the balance that matters, and isolation is what can cause issues.
Yeah, you had said something in the beginning of you can almost become too educated. And you had mentioned it kind of in the traditional education sense, but I feel like it can happen in the natural slash health
Totally.
community too. And you can become so boxed in of this way's the right way, or you become obsessive about it. Like
Totally.
you see one ingredient and you have to throw all of your shampoo away or whatever it is. And it all, like you said, it all comes back to this balance because you drive yourself crazy otherwise.
Totally. That's one of the things that kind of drives me crazy about the health world is like all the fear mongering around certain ingredients. And I feel like now with social media, people are just looking for something that other people will share or something that's like attention grabbing or kind of like cutting edge new information. So like the chocolate thing, for example. I mean, I know that was in mainstream news, but or like certain accounts are like, oh, there's lead in this and lead in that. And then it just spreads like wildfire. And I think people, you know, it's human nature to like having knowledge and like being knowledgeable about things. And so then they're like quick to comment on like a post about, you know, like I've posted about Redmond Real Salt in the brand Redmond, and people are like, oh, that has lead in it. And again, it's that same concept of, you know, within balance and the trace minerals, those are all things that need to be taken into account. But yes, just the fear mongering. It's funny because I feel like a lot of people in the natural and health world got sick of mainstream medicine and stuff because of like the fear mongering and because of the pride and all of that. And then you shift away from that, but then you shift back into the opposite, you know, like pendulum of just like, oh, now you have all this pride about natural, you know, what you think is the best and all this. You're not willing to open your mind and realize like, okay, there's always room for learning no matter what.
And also recognizing everyone has a budget. You know, everyone's budget is different, but everyone has a budget. So if you can't go out and buy the $5,000 air purifier and the $2,000 water filter, and all, like you do what you can. Like, and
Totally.
I feel like some of these accounts, not yours, it can become very, if you don't have this, you're not healthy.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. And I feel like social media in general really fuels like consumerism, just purchasing anything and everything. Like, at what point in history have we all had access to each other's homes and pantries and clothes and everything like at this rate? Whereas before, like, you know, 30 years ago, you really only see the homes or pantries or whatever of like your family and your mom and like maybe a couple neighbors. But now it's like constantly this constant like keeping up with the Jones type of thing,
It is.
you know? And so, yeah, in the health world, that's absolutely true. And so, yeah, it's really fascinating space to be in.
I know when I first dove in, like I dove in head first. I was like, we have to do all the things. You know, you had to get the right, like all the things, right? And my husband was like, we're not millionaires. You can't just go out and throw out everything that we have. And I was like, but it's
Totally.
toxic and we're gonna die.
Yeah, I
He's
know.
like,
And it's so
no.
sad. It really is sad because that fear creates like this chronic stress, you know, which is inflammation, which is essentially a majority of what you're trying to move away from as you remove these ingredients and
Right.
everything. So yeah, I look back at like myself during a few years of like this non-toxic journey, and I feel like really sad for myself in the headspace I was in. So yeah, if you're new to this journey or in that headspace, I would really encourage you to try to break out of that because you're doing more harm. I'm not saying you, but anyone
Oh,
who's listening, yeah, just try to be more at peace. And that in and of itself is one of the biggest health hacks that you can have, is just like being at peace and just take baby steps and do the best with where you're at and, continue to improve. That's all you can do in anything in life. But yeah.
yeah, be like Elsa and let it go and go get some
Yes.
sun and walk barefoot. Like all those things are
Yeah,
free.
there's so many things that are free. So a question that I ask if there's a lot of conflicting information or I'm not really sure is just like, how can I get closest to nature, or like how is this food closest to nature in its natural form type of thing? And so with so many things, that's the question I always go back to. Or how did our ancestors, like thousands of years, move, for example, like as females? No, they were not constantly like doing CrossFit style workouts that left them breathless on the floor. They were like, lifting some things, doing some walking, maybe doing some jogging, like, things like that is what helps keep me kind of like in tune with and in balance with, I don't know, I guess my biology,
I
if
feel
that
like
makes
that's,
sense.
yeah, no, that makes really good sense. And I feel like that's a really great way to sometimes cut out the noise of,
Yes, for sure.
because person A is saying this and person B is saying this and person C is saying this. And you can maybe find little truths in all of them.
Totally.
But if you're in tune with your body and you're like, well, or even just going back to the ancestors, if you're still learning how to be in tune with your body, I feel like that's a really great way for people to empower themselves.
Yes, for sure. And yeah, just think about that aspect and kind of like, so let's say if we're talking exercise, for example, think about that aspect and try to do those things that you feel like are more aligned with what your ancestors did. If your body's telling you differently, because we are all made up differently and we all did come from different, different biology, then if your body's not responding well to that or whatever, you can make slight adjustments. But that's what I always go back to is like, okay, how did this exist in nature, or how can I get close to nature? What did our ancestors
Yeah, I know when it depends on what I guess camp you're in, but some people are like,
do?
oh, you have to intermittent fast, and if you don't, you're never gonna lose weight and it's not healthy. Like our ancestors only ate one meal a day. And then there's other people who are like, no, you need to eat multiple meals a day. And I'm just like, if I don't eat multiple meals a day, you don't want to be around me because I become hangry.
Yes.
Like I eat like a bird. So
Yeah.
for me, I need to eat multiple meals a day. And whether that's right or wrong according to this person or that person doesn't matter because
Totally.
I'm a nicer person when I eat.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth in a lot of what other people say, and but you just have to adjust it to make it work for yourself, So, yeah, not everyone's the same, and what works for one person is not going to work for another person because we all have different biology, So it's just like one size fits all medicine, like doesn't work, and neither does one size fits all diet or exercise or whatever. There's so many factors.
Quick question, because I was thinking about something you had said when you were talking about your fertility journey. And I'm very big about informed consent. When they were going to prescribe you Clomid, did they warn you of any of the possibilities? Okay.
No, not like I did not even know, I kid you not, what informed consent was until I was in dental hygiene school.
Okay.
So at that point, I was 26 years old, and I just like, I'm blown away that just, yeah, I'm so grateful that social media has really opened the conversation around informed consent. But yeah, no, not a peep about. I actually still don't even know the risks of Clomid. I've never really looked. But yeah, birth control. I talk a lot about birth control and have kind of opened conversations there around informed consent and risks and stuff there. But yeah, no, not a word about Clomid or birth control for that matter.
So, I'm going to go on a little Clomid soapbox for a second.
Hey, yeah.
So my mother used Clomid to conceive me, and like you, she was not told of anything. I was born with a bunch of different heart issues, open heart surgery as a baby. You know, I have a left radial clubbed hand, all of these different things. And the answer was, we're going to go see a geneticist because you have to have some type of mutation.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen geneticists in multiple states. No one can figure out what's wrong. About maybe 4 months ago now, Just the Inserts posted a post about Clomid. And wouldn't you know it, the way I was born matches up perfectly with all the risks of Clomid.
Oh my gosh.
And I about died when I saw that, because that was never talked about. And so the risks of Clomid, it's commonly used to help women conceive.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But now if you scroll down if you type in Clomid package insert, it'll mm-hmm. be like the first one. It says like Access FDA is the mm-hmm. URL you're looking for. And you scroll down towards the bottom, it'll say like post-marketing neonatal or fetal abnormalities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things about heart and kidney and bone structure and mental things and eye things and cleft palates and ear things, like everything. And I was like, and it's still being prescribed today, and women aren't being told. Oh, I had to ask that question when you mentioned Clomid.
Wow. Thank you so much for telling me that. That's fascinating. I had no idea. And don't they use Clomid often in like fertility treatments?
Yeah. It's super common.
Yeah. That's interesting. And kind of, yeah, that's so fascinating. And I feel like fertility treatments are becoming more and more common, and it's going to be very, very interesting. And I know this is a sensitive subject, but it's going to be very interesting to see the next few generations of children and when they become adults, just maybe these things that, because, you know, we're doing all of these things, of course, with good intentions, right?
Right.
Who doesn't?
Right.
I mean, there's lots of people, I guess, that don't want children, but if you want children, like, of course, the intentions are good, but you're doing Clomid and all these hormones. And, you know, we know that birth control hormones, well, the synthetic hormones are causing all these problems. So what's going to happen down the road? It's so fascinating to see, but wow, that's so interesting that you found that.
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah. And someone else had brought up too, I'm not going to mention brands, but get a good water purifier, because women who are taking birth control, when they urinate, they excrete it. The water mm-hmm. treatment plants don't filter that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're drinking it in your water, mm-hmm. you know, whether mm-hmm. you're male, female, kid, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, puberty is starting earlier for boys and girls. And where is that coming from? And I feel like that's a multifactored answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, they're giving hormones and antibiotics to animals, and they put antibiotics in like farmed fish water. And it's just so crazy that all of these things. And actually, it's interesting kind of that you bring that up, because kind of going back to the fluoride thing real quick.
Yeah.
So fluoride is interesting because it's classified as a medication, but they're putting it in our water. Where is the informed consent for that? There is none. Not to mention, they're not considering the fact that, you know, an infant who's consuming a bunch of bottles, like with formula made with this water with fluoride, is consuming a lot of water for his or her weight. Or if you take, you know, someone who's drinking a gallon of water per day, that might be like an athlete or something, versus someone who's not, you know, we're getting these different amounts of fluoride medication, essentially. And yeah, there's no informed consent. And actually in other countries, I want to say it was Sweden maybe, where when they were removing it from the water, that's what one of the like testifying pharmacists said, was just like, it goes against every aspect of informed consent, every principle of informed consent to fluoridate the water.
Well, and don't they even sell like jugs of quote unquote baby water that has fluoride in it? And that's definitely not informed consent.
Yes. Totally. And actually too, what's interesting is that the type of fluoride that they put in the water is actually a pollution byproduct. It's not even the fluoride that's been quote unquote studied, because, you know, to remineralized teeth. It used to be sodium fluoride is what was originally put in the water. Now it's HSF. I can't remember what it stands for, but anyway, yeah, it's a
Yeah.
different type of fluoride that's like a pollution byproduct. Like it's a poison. So yeah,
Well, and
interesting.
if you guys also want to know what you consume that's also a poison, is cottonseed oil and vegetable seed oil are also these industrial byproducts that they wanted to learn how to sell, and so that's what you're consuming. Don't eat
Yes.
that either.
Yes, if you've ever watched, like, if you want to see the process, go on YouTube and look up canola oil process to watch how they make canola oil, and it's disgusting and fascinating all at the same time.
My husband was telling me how, and he's a little bit older than me, but they would come around to classrooms and do fluoride treatments where they would have all the kids like swish and spit for fluoride treatments. And I didn't have that as a kid in school, but I remember like the little sponge that they'd like put the fluoride treatment on. They'd have to then sit on your teeth and they're like, don't swallow. And, they put like the air hose in there so you didn't swallow. And it just tasted so weird and made your
So
teeth feel all
gross.
weird.
It still makes my teeth hurt to think about that and like my mouth water in a bad way. Yes, I totally remember that. So it's really fascinating. And I'm hoping this fluoride trial works in our favor. And, but I don't know. It takes, such a long time for the medical and dental, that includes dental fields, to catch up to research. Like, I think on average, it's 17 years to, and so it'll be interesting to see, not to mention like kind of the cognitive dissonance and the stubbornness of these dentists who have been preaching it for so long too, because even if it's removed from the water, they're gonna have a hard time coming to terms with the fact that everything that they've believed is not true.
My husband coined the term your bubble of belief. And so when
I
you're
love that.
so passionate about something and you're so indoctrinated about something, whatever that topic is, having outside opinions that could potentially burst that bubble, you become very defensive and you're not going to listen. Whether it's because when the world went weird in the Jabberwockies or no fluoride or GMOs or plant-based food or whatever it is, right? We don't want that bubble of belief to be pierced. Or,
Totally.
you think a certain politician's great. Like, it doesn't just relate to health stuff. You
Oh,
want
everything.
everything.
Yes.
And
It's uncomfortable.
it's being able to take in that new information on that topic that you're so dead set about, I feel like is really important and is the only way you can grow.
Totally. Yeah, it's really uncomfortable to be in that space of what you believed was like is not true, and to come to terms with new information. So I'm like, yeah, it's, I think, like we said, like the humbling aspect of moving away from traditional medicine or whatever and your beliefs around that, you become humble for a while as you relearn, but then you can build back up to that pride and that bubble of belief. So, really, I try to stay in that humble area, but it can be hard with certain things for sure. But yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know. I always say I don't know. I don't claim to know anything anymore. I've read a bunch of different opinions on different things, and there's very few topics that I have a very strong conviction on, to hopefully try and avoid that super prideful, stance.
For sure. Yeah, you just have to like be humble and just go back to that question of, like I said, like living close to nature. Like a few years ago, Reebok had this like phrase that I loved. It was be more human. And it's like we're so far removed from human now, and how we live and how we eat and everything. We're indoors sitting down all day eating food out of packages, and so just get back to being more human. And how can I do that? And like that's what's going to make us healthy. And I know it's not, we can't do that perfectly because of our modern world, but just trying to get back to that and always questioning, like, okay, does this align with that, will keep us hopefully in that more like humble lane.
Yeah, it is so interesting that you said that phrase from Reebok, because our church just did a 6-week sermon series and the theme was becoming human again. And it was all about
interesting.
Not just like reconnecting with nature, but reconnecting with your family, reconnecting with people, you know, when you're out looking someone in the eye, having a conversation, because mm-hmm. that's also a part of our humanity that we've lost for.
Totally.
So it's super interesting that you said that exact mm-hmm. phrase, because last Sunday was the last Sunday that, of that series.
That sounds like a really cool series. And that's true. Like, we've lost so much of our humanity in so many ways. And maybe, you know, for a long time, it's been like health things, and it's moving more and more toward the community aspect and moving away from that part of our humanity, which is part of our health. Yeah. And yeah, just lack of community and support and interaction. And it's so sad to see that. But yeah, it's so true.
I have thoroughly loved this conversation, and I truly appreciate you coming on and spending your morning with me. Your Instagram is Empowered Mama Movement, correct?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that'll be linked in the show notes. And if you guys have any questions, you know, you can reach out to her, reach out to me, and I will make sure, like I said, everything is in the show notes, her Instagram, that abrasiveness guide for toothpaste, all the things. And I wanted to thank y'all for listening, and I hope y'all have a wonderful, wonderful day.